Page 47, My Seattle Story by Dawn Wilcox, former sailor, Vela, circumnavigation 1973-78. I have a secret. I don't like to fly, and that isn't a problem, since I never go far. A 5-year sailboat excursion in the 70s was quite enough. However, my son Garth and daughter-in-law Wendy now live in Seattle. Too far to walk or take outreach, they came to visit me by Amtrak in the spring, so I decided to try the train now that Garth and Wendy were house-sitting. You won't catch me sleeping on the deck of their 31-foot sailboat. It has been known to rain in Seattle. I explored the Amtrak.com site, which was accessible, and got more information from Roger and Bernice, who had taken Amtrak to L.A. Wendy advised me to take a roomette, a small convertible sleeping car compartment, so I could get a good sleep. But it was much more expensive, though meals were included, so I took coach on the return trip. That way I could do a comparison and sleep the whole next day in my own bed at home if need be. I picked the date. The site gave me the time. Leave San Jose northbound at 8:39 p.m. Arrive Seattle 8:45 p.m. I discovered that for disability rate, you call 800-872-7245 and the agent books the ride for you. So on the big day, I took outreach to 65 Cahill in San Jose, where I picked up my ticket at check-in. I requested boarding help, and they remembered to come and take me to the right train and car. The train attendant helped me board my suitcase. You can check luggage if you wish. The train was late arriving, not an unusual event since freight trains have the right-of-way. While waiting, I chatted with the mother-in-law of a fellow Vista Center for the Blind volunteer, also going to Seattle. After we boarded, they announced that bedroom passengers would be served dinner, even though it was around 10 p.m. If you are disabled and don't want to walk to the dining car, the attendant will bring your menu choice. Page 48. The attendant converted the roomette into a bed with a pull-down bed above and nice sturdy steps to reach it. Each bed had controls for radio, air/heat, and a plug for charging cell phones or shavers. I forgot to ask my car attendant to show me where all these things were, but the couple across the hall was very helpful. The several bathrooms, changing rooms, and even showers were a few steps away on the other side of the open luggage racks. People were free to come and take things out of their bags, and you could even fit one bag in the roomette. It was a tiny room, but it had a big window, and you are free to go to the observation car, where there are many comfortable chairs, tables, and connections for laptops. Or you could find the cafe, which had packaged food, coffee, cocoa, and more tables. In the morning, I discovered I had to open the glass door to have enough room to tie my shoes, but I had slept well, the sound of the wheels making a nice rhythm. The attendant offered to convert my roomette back to seats, but I chose to keep it as a bed so I could take my usual nap. I asked how to find the dining car and went there for breakfast. Moving from car to car was similar to the Capital Corridor trains we take to CCB conventions in Sacramento. There is the plate I push to open one door, and then I checked out the metal ridges with my cane as I crossed. I kept forgetting my car number and didn't find the sign until halfway to Seattle. There was Braille on the bathroom doors, but there could have been more. Once I opened the door to number 11, my roomette, and discovered two surprised people sitting there. Then I learned the sleeper sections have the same numbers, and it makes a difference if you are in car 1143 or 1142. In the diner, you sit with other passengers, and most were talkative. Page 49. When I went to the observation car, people were pointing out waterfalls, which I never managed to see, but I did see miles of green trees go by. The track was narrow up in the mountains, so I was closer to the forest than I would have been in an automobile. My room window was on the lower level, and I felt like I could almost touch a little creek we passed. I listened to a couple of books on my voice note M-Power and managed to crash my cell phone trying to learn how to use the magnifier, but I did call Roger before we got into the no-signal bars area. Later, the attendant fixed my phone by removing the battery. I'd forgotten to try that. It seems weird to have to reboot a cell phone. The train stopped several times for freight trains, and for one long period, so maintenance people could repair a wheel on one of them. Then I got to see a whole freight train go by my window, so close I could see strange cars that looked like short grain silos. Since I was traveling first class on this trip, I decided to see if I could walk the whole train, get some exercise, and find the lady I'd met in San Jose. No one changed clothes, and she had a distinctive blouse and necklace. If you are a peasant, my term for coach traveler, you are not allowed forward of the dinner car. Being of the elite, though, I walked through the food prep area and through the cars till I ran out of train. I found the lady, and we had a chat. Then I walked the wrong way and ended up back at the train's end again. On the way back, my friend said she wondered why I reversed direction. If I followed someone close enough, the doors stayed open for me to get through. Smoking was not allowed anywhere on the train, but they let people off at a few stations to walk, and the nicotine addicts could get their fix. I got off and walked in circles so I wouldn't lose the train. Page 50. In the afternoon, we were invited to a wine tasting. I thought it was free, but it turned out to be $5 to $10 if you were in coach class. The wine attendant had a tray for each of four wines, but I only made it to number two, not being much of a drinker. I had the train attendant bring dinner to me. You have to make an appointment for meals as the dining area is small and the train's completely booked. They announce 6 p.m. seating and so forth, and all the train riders can eat at their seats or in the cafe. We had a little adventure in our car as a valve got stuck open in one of the bathrooms. I was on my way back to my roomette, and they stopped me and had me wait in a regular bedroom. Nice space, had its own bathroom, but twice as expensive. It turned out the problem was the drinking water tank that emptied, and they refilled it at the next stop. After about 20 minutes, they let me go downstairs. After covering the floor with towels, the attendant was very upset as she'd never dealt with a flood in her 2 months on the job. I helped her by unmaking my bed to get ready for arrival. She sure had a lot of linen for someone to wash. I called Garth on my cell so they'd know the train was an hour late. The visit. After the train arrived in Seattle, I detrained, a term I learned on the trip. The attendant told me which direction to walk, and as I walked along, I spotted someone running towards me, flapping her arms, Wendy, my daughter-in-law, who gave me a big hug, and then I spotted my son, Garth. Now, some of you know Garth and Wendy had recently returned from 7 years of sailing the Pacific Ocean in Velella, a 31-foot sailboat. Page 51. Garth now has an actual job. But they're still living like gypsies, no car, living on the boat and house-sitting. Garth borrowed his company's car to pick me up. My goodness, what a great house to live in, rent-free. It is on a hill with a view of Puget Sound. It is owned by a sailing couple in their 60s who sail every summer among the Vancouver Islands. Too bad they're coming back so soon. They had a full basement with shop, dark room. The wife has published a book that included her pictures. This house also has a big yard with raspberry bushes. The next day, Wendy taught me how to find the right berries, and we went out picking. During my 7 days there, Garth and I prepared a surprise party for Wendy's birthday. Wendy and I tried to carry a heavy table from the basement and got stuck trying to turn the stair corner out to the yard. At one point, the door was jammed, and the only way to get in and out was to crawl through the table legs. Not too smooth for a party. We called Garth at work to come rescue us. He pointed out he had work to do at work. What a concept. It occurred to me that we could turn the table on its back and slide it back down the stairs. When Garth got home, he actually measured the table and had no trouble getting it outside. We had a good party. Sailing on the Sound. The Velella needed to be moved back to Bainbridge Island from a temporary tie up closer to the current house. The problem, if we sailed in the evening when Garth gets off work, it would take us till midnight to get home on the ferry. Solution, do it in the daytime with Wendy as captain. And guess who is crew? I, the one who hasn't sailed in 30 years, when I could see a lot better. Such a brave captain. So we set off. Luckily, I brought my rain jacket, but I didn't have any boat shoes. I remembered that ropes are called lines, and those pointy things on the dock are cleats. I used my cane to gauge the distance from the dock and the height of the lifelines I had to climb over. Even though I am no spring chicken, I hung on to the hatch roof and managed to get on board without falling in the water. Wendy was very good at backing out and so on. This was a motor, not a sailing trip. We avoided a freighter and ferry boats, and then it started to rain. That made Wendy very depressed, but I equate sailing with being wet, so it seemed normal to me. Page 52. We had timed the trip so Garth could meet us on Bainbridge. We called him, and he set off from work on his folding bike, took the ferry, and met us at the Bainbridge City dock, where I had managed to disembark in the rain and put the line around the cleat. Garth was amazed I'd gotten on Villella without a box. Our trip back to the house on the mainland started with a nice Mexican dinner and then the ferry in the rain. We spent a whole day at the 50th reunion of the Thunderbird fleet. T-Birds are designed to be built in a person's garage from nice straight pieces of marine plywood. We had one in the late 60s that we raced in San Francisco Bay out of Redwood City. My daughter Linda was 3, and her job was to take a nap. Garth was 6 and quickly became a crewman. Wendy and Garth owned and raced a T-Bird in Seattle before they got Villella, so it was a day of running into people they knew. Wendy was offered a job on the spot, writing an article about the event, so she started taking pictures and interviewing. On the day I returned home, Garth came with Wendy and me on the bus with 2 cans of bottom paint for Villella and my suitcase. He managed to stow this all under the bus seat, as it was quite full of commuters. He pulled everything out when we got to his stop, and Wendy and I went on to the train station. The train was also fully booked, and I had a coach seat to save money. A bad decision. The trip was fine again, and I used the cafe, the diner, and some cheese and nuts we bought at Trader Joe's in Seattle. I couldn't walk the length of the train this time. Coach passengers are not allowed forward of the dining car. I also noticed that there didn't seem to be a shower as in the bedroom cars. I booked a lower-level coach seat as Bernice suggested, so the bathrooms were on the same level, but I couldn't find a way to adapt my body to the seat for sleeping. It was very comfortable for listening to my books and reading a Braille health newsletter, just not for sleeping. Page 53. Unfortunately, we had an autistic boy in the car. He was about 8, and he had learned that he, his sister, and mother were going to California. Yes, he kept announcing that all night, full volume. Sometimes the others in the car would be drifting off to the comforting click-click of the wheels. Aunt Tina's house, he'd yell, or the one that got his mother moving, go potty. The poor boy managed to lose a tooth, and the mother had to try to keep him from sticking his finger in the socket and started bleeding again. I tried to get him to focus on me when the mother started saying, oh, God. He finally went to sleep at 2 a.m. Bad timing, as they were getting off at Reading at 3 a.m. No way they could wake him up. I helped the tired sister gather their many bags while the mother tried to drag him off. At the station, the train attendants helped them get from the car to the steps to the ground. I felt sorry for them out there at 3 a.m. I hope Aunt Tina and Uncle Paul came to pick them up. I felt like we knew the whole family. I thought we could sleep then, but we acquired a new passenger who was in tobacco withdrawal, no smoking on Amtrak. She kept asking when the smoking stop was. I also worried about this lady, since she was going to get her 13-year-old son from the father and take him back. At one point, she said to her seatmate, who are you? You're not my sister. Too bad we didn't have a psychologist on that car. My last seatmate was very nice. She asked about my Vista hat and was very interested in nonprofits. By this time, I'd given my card to 2 families who had visually impaired members. I went up and had a good breakfast after Sacramento, arrived only an hour late in San Jose, called outreach for an open return ride, and went to bed at 11 a.m. with 1 or 2 brain cells working. A very interesting adventure, and I will ride the rails again. A couple days later, I wrote a letter to Senators Feinstein and Boxer and Representative Eshoo, urging them to give the daytime right-of-way to Amtrak, explaining how many passengers were speaking of the cost of gas and not liking air travel.